Welcome to Software Gone Wild, a podcast focused on everything software-defined in networking and around networking. I'm Ivan Pepelniak, and you can find me on ipspace.net, where you'll find my blog, my website, and loads of SDN information, which is grouped under a separate page called sdn.ipspace.net. Now, as you know, a large part of SDN is software-based switching. We've been doing switching in software for ages. My first router only did software-based switching, for example, but there were always performance problems. And whenever you start talking about performance of software-based switching, someone inevitably mentions PFRing. PFRing is an open source project that helps you get blazing forwarding performance on an x86 box. And today, I'm lucky enough to have Luca Derry with me. Luca is the author of PFRing. Did I get that right, Luca?
Correct. I was the original author of PFRing when I started the project. Now, yeah, I have other people also helping me.
Oh,
thanks
I
for the introduction.
So. Yeah. So how did this whole thing start? How did you get the idea, oh, I need to do PFRing?
Okay, the story started when I returned to Italy after, you know, doing my PhD in Switzerland, and I got a job at the University of Pisa. And people started to wonder what was happening on the network. So I've been asked to write an application that was able to understand and decode the traffic. And this was the original NTOP. At that time, it was 1998, and the speed of the network was not very important. But, you know, it was important to be efficient. Also because it was clear to me that capturing packet was not something that was coming for free. Therefore, after a couple of years of investment in NTOP, I was introduced by some Greek guys at the University of Crete to one person who said, we believe that it is time to do something efficiently in Europe about packet capture. So basically, I written this European project proposal for a European project called Scampi. And inside Scampi, the idea was to do high-speed network monitoring. But, you know, not everybody agrees on the same technique, on the same tool, so even have different point of view. So basically, this project was divided in two big groups. The first group was about FPGAs. At that time, Endace was the leader of high-speed packet capture using FPGAs. And there was an emerging company that, you know, thanks to European project, also became a company in the Czech Republic that was playing with FPGA. This was the first group. And then there was a smaller group. Actually, I was basically alone that was thinking differently. So, namely, my idea, because I was coming from the open source world, was that, you know, it is not possible to tell people, okay, network monitoring, it is a good idea, but at the same time, the fee you have to pay for doing it efficiently at 1 gigabit, it was the early 2000, is very high. So without mentioning the price of those costly FPGAs, I have seen many problems with this approach. The first approach was, of course, the price. The second problem was the freedom, because, you know, it is complicated to say, okay, if you want to buy this card, you have to sign this NDA, you cannot tell anybody, you cannot include this library into your application, you know, and so on and so on and so on. So I said to myself, okay, let me try to do something different. Let me see if I can write something in software for Linux, that was my operating system of choice, that is able to compete with these costly cards. And then everything started from here. I started to play a little bit with my A486. It was a slow machine, but it was slow on purpose. Namely, I wanted to see what we can do with the low-end hardware. And everything started in this very simple way, as a challenge to demonstrate that, you know, those FPGA cards are good, but they are not necessary all the time. But again, it was not just a problem of performance. It was a problem of freedom. Freedom to do whatever I wanted to do without signing too many legal documents. This is kind of the beginning of PFRing.
So you mentioned NTOP when you started explaining how PFRing came to be. So it all started with Ntop then.
Yes. It started there because Ntop was the reason why we are here today. I mean the original Ntop, because now there is a new version. Ntop was at the time a tool I designed because, you know, I told you I wanted to give an answer to these people at the University of Pisa without having to do too much scripting. So in Unix, what many people do, they take this tool, the other tool, take output, grab the result, you know, run, you know, a bash, Perl, Python, whatever script, and then at the end, they produce a certain output. And this was possible. So when people wanted me to find out who are the users, the heavy users of the bandwidth, you know, you can do this with, you know, TCP dump into a file, run a script, you know, do many things. But the problem was that I wanted to have something simple. And then I started to create Ntop, designed as a tool for similar to Top, from which the name is coming from, that is able to tell these are the top whatever from the network point of view. So the top sender, the top receiver, these are the top ports being used, and so on and so on. So this was my initial attempt to create a new tool. And initially, Ntop was a tool for the command line. It was, like I said, similar to Top. So you started on a shell and see what's going on. But, you know, I always liked the user interface. And, you know, I'm a Mac user since a very, very long time. And on the Mac, there was no terminal. On the Mac, there was just, you know, the mouse and the graphical screen. So I wanted to put a GUI that allows people to see what's going on without, you know, having to use a terminal. And then I changed the core of Ntop, turning this command line tool into a web-based tool. The web was not so popular at that time. Yeah, there were some resources, but it was very, very primitive. First of all, because, you know, not all PCs had very beautiful graphics, so the images were limited. The output of websites was really suboptimal, I would say. And also it was not rich at all. But at the same time, when I said, I want to put a GUI on Ntop, I decided to go for the web because for me, the web was the future, was clearly the future. I don't know if today the web is probably misused in the sense that, you know, it is used too often to do things that you could do in a different way. But for me, the web was a good way for an open source program to run graphically into, you know, various operating systems very easily. Don't forget that 15 years ago, it was not like today, where basically the number of operating systems is very limited. You have Linux, you know, some non-Linux guys that still rely on Linux, such as, you know, FreeBSD still exists, but they are a minority. There is Windows, and that's it. Those days, there were many, many different operating systems. You know, also talking about Unix, it was a diaspora because there were so many different operating systems from IBM, from HP, Sun, Solaris, SunOS. You know, it was complicated. So this was the best I could think about. And because of Ntop, yes, I started to design PFreen. And that because I used Linux, the platform was definitely Linux. And because PFreen is kernel-based, you know, porting it to another kernel requires some effort. But for me, it was not a goal because, you know, the important thing was to say, okay, Ntop works fine. If you want to have better performance, then move to Linux. And you will have this this free kernel module. So everything started this way, very simple way.
So the early Ntop, if I understand correctly, was more or less what you get, let's say, on a Cisco router when you're looking at top senders, top receivers, top protocols.
Yes. It was probably a little bit different, more interactive. But correct, it was something like that, yes.
And now you have the next generation Ntop, if we just if we went down that path, why not? So what's new in the Ntop NG?
Ntop NG has been unnecessary step, because when I designed the end top, it was, like I've said before, 1998. There were so many things that don't exist anymore today. So, for instance, in terms of protocols, I put a lot of energy to support things like, you know, IPX, AppleTalk, all these kind of protocols.
Oh, yes.
That today, yeah, are history. Probably not everybody knows them. And also, the problem of NTOP that was that the design was good, but it was not fantastic, because, for instance, there was not a clear separation between the user interface and the engine. And also, the web was part of the program, but like I've said before, it was introduced later, so it was still, you know, kind of an intruder into this this application. So after a very long time, I said to myself, I want really to do NTOP properly using modern tools. I want to have a modern GUI, because NTOP was graphical, was HTML. Yeah, correct, but it was not much Ajax-based. It was not very fresh in terms of user interface. So I said, let's start over. Okay, and the first goal is to make it modular. Okay, I want to make sure that you know, people can use this tool, but also can, if they want, program for this tool. So, because I believe there are not so many programmers around, or at least this is my impression from my almost 20 years of NTOP, I said, let's create the engine in an efficient way. So this time, let's write it in C++ instead of C, like in the first version. And let's say, glue together the components, or allow people to write the user interface using a scripting language. This way, you really decrease the complexity that is required to do something with NTOP. Because, you know, in the original version, that was a monolithic C application, it was really complicated to do changes. You have to change this line, you must know C, you must recompile, you must understand the API. So it was a bit complicated. So I said, first problem I want to solve, the design. The design must be simple. Second problem, the GUI. The GUI must be present inside NTOP. The GUI will be HTML, but NTOP must be a source of data. NTOP should not be a monitoring application like it used to be. In fact, I believe that the trend here in monitoring is to reduce every problem to basically a data production problem. So in the case of network monitoring, I think that you know, the fact that here we are talking about NetFlow, S-Flow, proprietary tools in a way, such as NTOP, that don't follow any standard, is wrong today. Today, we have very great tools that are able to play with a lot of data, okay, what people call big data, very easily. They have a nice GUI, you know, nice way to drill down data. So from a point of view, monitoring today is a way to produce data that, you know, is coming from the network, of course, but it's just data that you can combine and can visualize in a GUI. So therefore, NTOPNG has been designed this way. So to produce data and to push this data somewhere. If you still want to use the GUI, that's fine. It's the way that most people use NTOP. But NTOP looks like a server today, a source of data, monitoring data. Another problem that I wanted to solve was the speed. I wanted NTOPNG to be fast, to be dramatically fast, to be able to run at 10 gigabit with PFLink. And the old version was not really designed like that. It was, you know, a bit complicated design. You know, sometime in life, you have to make a decision. You have to take, you know, some time to make some risk. And I said, okay, I prefer to stop here, to put NTOP on the side, and to start over with something new. I understand that for some time, it will not be feature complete. But I understand that if I want people to use it, I must start over. So I did some kind of violence to myself when I written it from scratch, when I said, okay, I don't want to look at the old NTOP anymore. I didn't look at a single line of code, because, you know, the easiest thing would be to do an incremental port from the old NTOP to the new NTOPNG. But I said, this is not the right thing to do. So I started from scratch, really from scratch, literally, And today, NTOP is not still the application I have in mind, because there are many features that I want to add, but it is a reasonable console for monitoring networks. It can be used for producing and visualizing data, so it can read packets from a network interface and show you what's going on a GUI. Or you can use, like I've said, NTOPNG for producing data that you'll be pushing somewhere else. And like I've said, in the past, there was a lot of emphasis on the protocol. There were, followers of SNMP, followers of NetFlow, other people that said, oh, no, the future is SFlow. I think that today these are not good arguments anymore. I think that today it is important to say, okay, we support all the standards, but we want to give a comprehensive view of what is happening, regardless of the data source. Some data sources might be richer, others might not be so rich, but it is important to allow everything to be integrated in one single place. This is what I did with NTOPNG. NTOPNG is able to receive data from the network. I decided not to pollute the code with NetFlow, SFlow, all these kinds of protocols. That's why I have an application. So the main one I'm using is mProbe. That is another open source probe I have designed that is translating from the local protocol, let's say NetFlow or IPFix, to JSON. So, and I send data over a messaging queue to NTOPNG, and NTOPNG can take this data and push it forward. This is because I want to translate once the data from the local format to a more general format, and let the application and the developers focus on the monitoring problem rather than on the data format. Because, many times you see that problems with application are coming from the fact that the data is presented in a certain way. If you change, for instance, the data format, there are side effects that are not neglectable. So, for instance, for autonomous system, that for a very long time we survived with the 16-bit AESs, and now, they're not enough, so they have been extended. But if you look at this problem from the monitoring point of view, you will see that the code contains a lot of if 16-bit, if 32, if mix, all those problems should not be relevant to monitoring guys. That's why one of the design choices of NTOPNG was to say, okay, NTOPNG is a gateway of data, or it's a data producer, or it's both of them. But we want this application to be able to survive for other 20 years, like the original NTOP did. That's why we have to design it to be open, to be able to accept any data that we have today or that we'll have eventually in the future, and to make sure that we can integrate everything into an efficient solution. Like I said, it is based on pfring when you run it on Linux. And if you need to go fast, NTOPNG is able to go fast. This is the whole idea behind the application.
Okay, so you mentioned nProbe, and I was going through your website and I got slightly confused there.
Mm-hmm.
So NTOPNG has like a core component that collects the traffic from the network and analyzes and summarizes it and makes that data available through whatever API.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yes, yes.
And then you said that mProbe is an application on top of this core engine.
mProbe was initially designed as a drop-in replacement for a Cisco NetFlow probe. But over the year, it also supports flow collection. So in the case of NTOPNG, mProbe is a data source. So it means that mProbe is converting flows, IPFix, NetFlow V5, V9, or SFlows, into a JSON that is sent to NTOPNG. But this conversion, it is used not just by NTOPNG. NTOPNG uses it because, as I said, I don't want to put any NetFlow or whatever SFlow code into NTOPNG, but I want to receive data in whatever format, so it's textual format at the moment. And this was the goal. But like I've said, the trend today is to put everything in one place and to do correlation. I think that we must credit Splunk years ago when they have created this wonderful application. And they said, okay, put everything inside this application and we are able to show you what is going on in your network very easily. And the same I did for mProbe. So mProbe is able to send this data to nTopNG, but it is also able to send this data to external application. So one good example is Elasticsearch, so where you can push this data into one place and correlate it. For instance, last fall, I was at the LISA conference, and I've seen that people were monitoring the LISA conference using Elasticsearch. And Elasticsearch was receiving SNMP information from the network, and was receiving information from nTop. Everything was in one place, also the HTTP logs. So this is the idea. mProbe is used by nTopNG to convert flow data into something meaningful for nTopNG, but it can also be used standalone to replace NetFlow probe, or to convert flows or packets into JSON flows that are sent to applications such as Splunk or Elasticsearch.
So mProbe is, in one, let's say, in one way, it's a gateway between NetFlow, SFlow, IPFix into JSON that you can then use in nTopNG or Elasticsearch or wherever. And it can also be a standalone NetFlow or SFlow probe where you monitor the local interface, probably with the nTop core engine, and then nProbe would export that data into NetFlow or SFlow format.
Yes.
Wow. I mean, just that is cool.
Thank you. But like I've said, from a point of view, it is not my idea. I learned it from the Splunk guys. The idea is to convert whatever, let's say, proprietary or non-simple format, binary format, into something meaningful and enjoy, the data, not the protocol.
Yeah, but for people who decided to go with NetFlow years ago, just having the ability of running a 10 gig probe on a reasonably sized x86 server is, I guess, priceless.
Yes, I agree. But I think that this trend is more and more common. If I look at what Cisco is doing, for instance, they have a new initiative called OpenSoC. And this OpenSoC, they're doing it in a similar way to what I do with mProbe. So namely, they receive flows, they convert them into JSON, and they push them into Kafka plus Hadoop and all the rest. So you see, I'm not alone. Again, I have not invented anything. So the credit goes to the Splunk guys. But I believe that in the future, more and more, the emphasis of the protocol will become less important and the data will become more important.
Okay. Oh, and then I've seen that you have the nBox, which is nProbe in a hardware format, right?
Yes and no. Let's say we have created many tools. So imagine Pfring, we mentioned nTop, nTopNG, we mentioned mProbe, we mentioned, and we have other tools. And the problem was that some people, okay, that are not really familiar with the command line, find this a bit complicated, especially to configure. So if you have this driver, the other driver, to understand, for instance, modern architectures such as the NUMA architecture. So where you have multiple CPUs, you have this card on this slot. So it's not a simple word. Because we have little time here, and at least the community is much larger than the number of people that are sitting here on the nTop side. We have said, let's create a web GUI that it is able to configure nTop NG, configure mProbe, create things on top of Pfring. Later, I can tell you more about that. So in essence, configure everything. If there is a mistake in the configuration, report this on a web GUI and give an idea of what is happening on your server that is hosting other application. So this is the nBox. It is a web GUI I created more than 10 years ago that my colleagues have now updated. It is written in Perl, so it's not a fascinating language anymore, but just to mention that, you know,
Don't bash Pearl.
It has a history. I like Pearl, but you know, if you mention it today, say people say, hey, what is this? So this is the web GUI. But because there are people that are interested in having everything packaged into one box, that is a turnkey solution, then we have partner companies that are taking all of our software and bundling them into a physical computer. And then, you know, this is also called the Nbox. So the physical Nbox appliance is a server with all of our software with the Nbox GUI to configure. But the Nbox is just a package. So we distribute it, you know, in our website. So if you go to packages.ntop.org, you can install the Nbox and all the other components and have yourself your own personal Nbox. But if you want, probably the name is misleading, also the physical Nbox exists.
Oh, so Nbox is on one hand the umbrella GUI, sort of.
Yeah. Yes.
And correct. On the other hand, it's a physical appliance that you can buy and plug into your network if you don't want to be bothered with the details of Linux and stuff like that.
Yes, this is correct.
And you mentioned that more or less all you do is open source and available on your website.
Yes, we have decided to do open source software many years ago, and we still believe that this is a good idea. Of course, that you know, in order to survive, you know, open source sometimes is not enough. So that's why we have also commercial extensions to what I just mentioned that you know we have you know available on our website. But again, we are a little bit different from the rest of the community. In essence, so we made this decision. We don't want to charge money for becoming rich, because this is not our goal. Our goal is to develop good software to enjoy what we do. But at the same time, we acknowledge that we need money to survive, to pay your bills, to buy new stuff. So for instance, these are the days of 40 and 100 gigabit, and we are buying hardware here and there just to make experiments with that, and the hardware cost. So therefore, we have said, okay, let's charge a little fee for our products, but let's make sure that people with money can pay, but not everybody. So for instance, all of our software, it is free, always been free, it will be free for people that are doing research, for people that you know are working in universities, for school, for no profits, no, for all those people that are not supposed to pay for our software, because you know they are not the right guys to pay. Instead, we ask you know a little fee to those companies that we believe are, you know, are supposed to pay. So, for instance, if a bank wants to use our software, they should pay. If a .com uses our software, they have to pay. So this is the reason why we have a strange, or let's say uncommon way of pricing stuff, so that we have the pure open source software, commercial extensions on top of the open source software, but that are, you know, for pay, just for those people that are supposed to pay, but, you know, not the no-profit, ONG, or universities. This is the idea.
So if I want to use your software for, let's say, testing or evaluation or personal use or research, I can just take it and start playing with it.
Yeah, and if you need, you know, a testing license, because, you know, for some of our products, you need a testing license or an evaluation license or a permanent license, yeah, you drop us an email, so, and we can give you the license for free, no cost, zero.
But if I'm a commercial organization and I want to use your software in production, then I have to pay.
Only for the commercial software. For the open source software, of course, it's free.
Ah, so just for the commercial extensions.
Yeah. The open source, for instance, ntopng is GPL version 3. pfring is GPL for the kernel module, and LGPL for the user space library. Yeah, just for the commercial extension, for the pure open source software, you know, you have to respect the GNU license, and that's it.
This sounds more than fair. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, you mentioned in a blog post that you wrote on your blog on ntop.org that you have plans for 2015, and one of those plans was 40 gig interfaces.
Yeah, correct.
Does that mean that we'll be able to do packet capture at 40 gig eventually this year?
Yeah, this is the idea. If you go to our SVN, public SVN, you will find the drivers for the new Intel 40G card. But unfortunately, I have to report that, you know, this card is not as efficient as I would have expected before buying it, because it looks to me an interim step. So I don't know where Intel wants to go, but it looks to me that this card is, let's say, it's not perfect. Okay, so at the moment, with this card, we are able to do multi 10 gigabit, but not line rate, at least not line rate with 60 byte packets. That's why we're also trying to explore other routes. So, for instance, one of the things I'm doing these days is to play with the Mellanox card. Mellanox are famous for InfiniBand, but those NICs are also able to do Ethernet. So this is one of the things that we are doing. If you want to do 40G today, you know, you can take one of those leading FPGA manufacturers. So, for instance, Napatech. And, of course, you can do 40G. But our goal for this year is to use commodity hardware for doing 40G. So if you want to have a solution for 40G, yes, we have a solution today. But if you're asking myself, are you happy with this solution? I say, let me see if I can do something better or, let's say, cheaper. So this is what we are doing in 2015.
So with Intel NIC, you can get to 20, 30 gig on small packet sizes and obviously line rate at large packet sizes?
Yes, something like that. But the main problem of this NIC is the following. Again, I don't want to blame Intel, but it looks to us that this card has limited buffers and has less buffer space than the existing X520 Intel interface. So therefore, buffers, especially at higher speed, means that you know, we can absorb, you know, peaks or say better have more time for the software, because the software, you know, so from time to time has to rest a little bit. In essence, when we are writing to disk, you know, we have to be cautious that, you know, from time to time the disk is taking a little bit of time, so we must buffer. And this card has very limited buffer. So, for instance, the old card had 32K slots. This card has, I think, a bit more than 4K slots. So it is not an optimal solution. But this card is interesting because it can be upgraded. So I hope that at some point a new upgrade will come out. But this said, you know, we are exploring other alternatives. And Mellanox is the one we are currently playing with.
Finally, one more question before we go down to the details of PFRing. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that you wanted to do DDoS mitigation on an x86 CPU.
Yes.
So how will that work? What are the ideas there? How do you plan to do that?
Yes, this software is already working for more than 6 months. So what we are currently doing at the moment, we are writing using the lessons learned by the first adopter. The software works this way. We have to face with DDoS. DDoS is a problem. It's a problem, first of all, for security, because people and ISPs in particular see this, you know, as an issue because they are not able to operate. So this is the problem. But because we have started many years ago doing network monitoring, this is still the main goal. We have to make sure that we can protect our software when there is a distributed denial of service attack. Because the problem of the DDoS is that it creates so many connections or packets or whatever that puts a lot of pressure on monitoring applications. Mm-hmm. So first of all, we want to protect our monitoring application. We want to protect EntopNG. I want to protect EnProbe. I want to protect this environment. This was the original idea. And then we have said, we believe that we can do something nice in this area. First of all, because we have worked for so long time with accelerated drivers, so we are now able to do multi 10 gigabit very easily on a standard PC. And we have said we believe there is a market because there are many people that are doing DDoS detection. But if you want to mitigate DDoS, in essence, you have to buy commercial boxes. At least I've not been able to find many software-based solutions that are able to do that. So the idea here is the following. We have created a software that, in essence, is a bump in the wire that analyzes the traffic and decides that, you know, there is something wrong happening and try to mitigate the attack. How does this work? In essence, the software is transparent. It's a bridge. It's a transparent bridge from the internet to your organization. It can work in full duplex or half duplex mode. So it means that it can forward packet from the internet to the organization, or also the return path. And it is able to analyze IP traffic, because non-IP traffic is forwarded by definition. Thanks to our PFRing technology, we're able to switch traffic in and out very efficiently. So the idea is to run at 10 and hopefully at 40 by the end of the year. What do we do? We set some policies. In essence, we implement a scrubber, actually a set of feature scrubbers. Let's make an example. So suppose that you're an ISP and you are a company and you have multiple hosts or networks to protect. You can specify a policy for each of your networks or for each of your server. And you can say, this is a DNS, so this is what it's doing, or this is a mail server, and this is what I'm supposed to see here. Or you can set a generic policy for everyone. So in case there is an attack coming, the scrubber, it is able to figure out whether there is something wrong and to start putting in place policies that are more and more aggressive. So the idea is that if there is no attack, the scrubber does not do anything. Of course, you can say mitigate or drop this type of traffic, but usually this should not happen unless you want this to happen. And then for specific protocols, we make some checks. So for instance, for TCP-based connections, we support several algorithms that for doing mitigation. One example is we count the number of connections from the attackers to a victim, or we count the number of SYN to a certain victim, and if there are certain thresholds, or if the SYN rate is too aggressive, so it means that there is not a real IP stack on the attacker side, then we start dropping these guys, or at least putting them into a queue with very low priority. We have other, of course, techniques that we support. For instance, the SYN cookie. So we can also support the SYN cookie for TCP. And for other protocol, UDP-based protocol, we have these sectors. So for instance, for UDP port 53, so DNS, in essence, we can understand whether there is something bad in the packet, even though most of the time the attacks use very good packets, so the packets are legitimate. It's just the volumetric attack per se that is bad, but the packets are not usually bad. Okay, there are some exceptions, like, packets with the same source and destination IP, but these are real exceptions. When somebody wants to make an attack, the packet is good. So the idea is that you have your existing network, you put our box in the middle. This box is able to understand that there is something wrong and starts mitigating, means that it starts bridging, in a certain way. Or if you are not really happy with the solution, you can use our software in a passive way. So basically the software is able to monitor the network and detect that there is an attack and make an action. So for instance, based on this action, you can set a policy on your router, or you can divert the traffic, or you can drop a certain destination. So these are the two ways the software is used. And at the moment, like I said, we have the initial version that we have used for learning this topic. And we are developing the official version 1 that we hope to be able to release by the end of spring. So this is the goal. And again, it will be a pure software-based solution based on PFRing. It will be able to protect your network at least a multi-10 gigabit. And hopefully when 40G will not be an issue for us, even at 40G.
So to recap, you have two interfaces. And using PFRing, you are able to bridge between them at line rate. And at the same time, you are analyzing everything that is bridged. And if you detect some weird behavior, you can interfere with the bridging code to implement more and more aggressive dampening policies.
Yes, but the bridging is implemented in user space by PFRing itself. So the bridging is not part of the Linux kernel.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, so you have your own user space module that copies packets from one receive ring into the other transmit ring.
Yeah, even though the word copy is misleading because in
The
essence
descriptors are copied. Okay.
we are flipping pointers on the same memory area. Yeah, correct. Yes.
So, this all sounds great. Where can I learn more? Where can I get this software? Where can I download it?
In essence, if you go to www.ntop.org, you can download all of our software. There is a download link, and there is also a link that allows you to get our software on our public code repository. So if you like to have a binary package, so we build binary packages for Ubuntu and for CentOS, then you can use this package and do apt-get install, and that's it. Or if you want to download our source code and enjoy the source code, there is the SVN repository. All it is in our website.
And if people want to get in touch with you or listen to you on some conference, how can they do that? Do you have a Twitter account? Do you have a blog? Do you speak at conferences?
Yes, we have a blog. So it's on the NTOP website. So there's a menu entry called blog or blog.ntop.org. And I attend some conferences per year. The current plan is the following. The next conference that we'll attend is the Wireshark conference in June in San Francisco, where I will give, again, a presentation about NTOP-NG. I don't usually go to too many conferences per year, but I try to focus on, you know, selected events. We are planning to this year to create some more training material. So, for instance, we have started to create some videos for people that want to be introduced to our software. But we are also thinking about making some kind of training sessions or remote training or remote interactive support. So something like, 1 hour per month, we meet somewhere on the internet. And if there are people asking questions, you know, we reply in questions, something very interactive. I'm trying to figure out what type of software exists that allows to do that, because, you know, webinars are a little bit not very flexible from a point of view. Also, there is the idea that, you know, we have to present something and others can ask just questions. We would like to have something like a virtual environment. So this is something that we are planning to do this year, in addition to physical meetings. And of course, if you are Italian or living close to the Italian border, in April the 16th, I will be in Bolzano, that is near the Austrian border, to the annual open source monitoring conference. I will be speaking there. We are also planning to have a NTOP-NG event. We still have to decide, what we'll be doing. But, this is another opportunity for meeting us in person.
So why didn't you tell me that before? On April 16th, I'm in Germany, and I would love to be in Bolzano because it's only like 3 hour drive away from me.
Okay. I will send you an email with all these dates.
Okay, so I might just drop by. I don't know. No promises.
Okay, you're welcome. More than welcome.
So, Luca, thanks for being with me. Thanks for this great podcast. And we will continue the next time with PFRing because I really want to know those details.
Okay, as soon as you publish something, please drop me an email that I want to listen to what we have done today.
Absolutely. And I'm Ivan Pepelniak, and you can find me on ipspace.net. And you can find all the SDN resources I put together over the last few years at sdn.ipspace.net, where you'll also find links to this podcast, webinars, and tons of other things. Thanks for being with us, and next time, it will be PFRing.